It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley's here. So is, oddly enough, Windows 11 22H2. All the details here, including a new visual effect called Micah. No, it's not related to Micah Sargent. PC sales are down, and they'll be down again next year. What is with AMD's new naming conventions? And a good news, bad news scenario for Halo Infinite. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 793, recorded Wednesday, September 7th, 2022. AMD's circular slide rule. This episode of Windows Weekly is brought to you by Thinkst Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box. And by Unify Meeting from MIMO Monitors. Unify simplifies your work life by combining your favorite video conferencing solutions into one reliable, universal user interface. Visit unifymeeting.com and enter the code WW for 25% off a year's subscription. Or use the same code to get 25% off any of MIMO's 7-inch displays. And by Tanium. Tanium unites operations and security teams with a single platform that identifies where all your IT data is, patches every device you own in seconds, and implements critical security controls all from a single pane of glass. Are you ready to protect your organization from cyber threats? Learn more at tanium.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. No, I'm kidding, dozers. That's Paul Thurrott. Do you have any snark left after the last couple hours?
I know.
I'm all snarked out. I'm just going to reread my top five tweets from the Apple event.
You could. They were pretty funny. I read a few of them. Thurrott.com, of course. Leanpub.com for his books. Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet, all about Microsoft.com. We're not here to talk about Apple. I mean, that would be silly. Let's talk about Windows 11.
There's nothing to say. There's nothing going on over there.
Nothing going on. Pay no attention.
Guess what? Here's a shocker, everybody. They have new iPhones.
New iPhones. Yeah. The watch looked pretty sweet, though. Yeah.
Which one? The one that looked like a donut or the one that...
The dive watch? Yeah.
I like to tie a donut to my wrist and use it as a portable flotation device.
New from Duncan, the Apple Watch Ultra. I immediately ordered it, Paul, because I'm a sheeple.
Is it full of jelly? What's going on?
Full of titanium, I heard.
It's full of, if I crash, it'll tell the world. So that's good.
It's like, hey, I think you crashed. Yeah, thanks for the heads up. I'm kind of bleeding to death here. Do you think you could?
Yeah, just let's hurry this along.
Maybe do something about it.
As I have mentioned before the show, but perhaps those listening don't know, I am dressed in a more casual attire today because I am heading out to a rock and roll show afterwards.
Wow. Is there like a t-shirt with torn sleeves under that or something?
You should see. Really... You know, I'm a little disappointed because Lisa was doing how one does, going through the closet looking for the right thing to wear for a Motley Crue concert.
Sure.
She had a nice torn Motley Crue t-shirt, some form of jeans that looked like they were painted on. And I said, that's perfect. She said, yeah, I'm not going to wear that. So anyway,
then you were like, what are you going to wear?
I'm just wearing a little Tommy Bahama thing. They're going to look at her and look at me and go, he's just there. He drove her.
Well, the reason you're there is so she can sit on your shoulders.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it. Let's talk about Windows 11. That's more interesting. 22H2. I thought there wasn't going to be a 22. I'm confused. What's going on?
I'm surprised because they've been so clear on the messaging.
Exactly.
So there is going to be a 22H2.
There is. Lipstick on. What's going on there?
Did you get a big smooch? from Stephanie before you came on. Have like a great show, Paulie.
Did I turn on the clown filter or something?
I think you were salivating from all those.
That looks weird. I don't look like
he was foaming at the mouth during the Apple show. That's what it was. Yeah. That's what it was.
There we go.
What is going on?
No, I don't. I'm
concerned. Do I look like that?
No, you don't look like that.
I don't look anything like that.
No, it's just in your head. Yeah, it's just in your head. 22H2, you better explain this to me, if you would, please.
Rumored release date is September 20th, though Microsoft has not said that publicly.
Okay.
And it is, to our knowledge, still called 22H2.
Okay.
The version. There is an update that is rumored to be called the Windows 11 2022 update, right? Which is the update you will install to get to version 22H2. I think that's correct.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's a huge release. Mary Jo, do you want to run through the top 37 features?
I think there's something to do with... Tabbed Explorer is not there. So File Explorer is not there. There's something to do with the layouts. If you hover
over... Yes, by the way, okay,
does
actually,
it,
you know
does
what?
It have a fantasy island?
No, but she's right. Actually, if you had to pick the one big feature, honestly, I would say it is...
It's the layouts,
Snap Layouts,
right?
Discoverability feature. Yeah, right. So if you start to move a window around, a pane will pop up at the top, leading you to maybe drag the thing to it, and then you'll see the possible layouts you can use for Snap. Yeah,
yep.
That's true. There you go.
Yeah, okay.
It's kind of downhill after that, but that's a good one. That is a good one.
Other than that, there's not a whole lot, right? You can drag and drop some more stuff onto taskbar. There's groupings of icons, right?
Which is mostly, most people are
people
need
care.
That.
People do care.
I care.
There's a live captions feature, which I think is quite good.
I would call it, even though they're going to call it a major update to Windows 11, I would quantify it as a small update.
I would also say almost
like a cumulative update because it's so small.
Yeah. And it's a little embarrassing because they had a whole year to get this done. You know, the Windows 10 timeframe, obviously, we had big updates and little updates, but a lot of the little updates were kind of a 6 month later kind of a deal and understandable. But this OS needed some pretty big updates, and it's weird that they didn't address most of that.
You know what? Maybe they're saving them for those rumored moments, those like. Right. Periodic feature drops that could come at any time in any way that we don't really know when or how will happen. Maybe that's why they're saving some stuff to hold it back and then drop it. Maybe.
Yep, maybe. This is like we're having a baby. Oh, is it going to be a boy or a girl? Oh, we're waiting to be surprised. It's going to be a surprise no matter when you find it.
Will they have a big gender reveal at some point?
Yeah, I would assume. I would assume they will.
When are we going to get Tab File Explorer? It's going to be a surprise.
Yeah. No, and you know what? The other thing we know nothing about is when is Windows 10 22H2 coming? We do not know that either. And that's the version that most people are running who are running Windows. So we don't know anything about that. We don't even know what's in that, right? Like, we don't have a feature list at all for that.
Oh, so this is 22H2 for 11. And is there for sure a 22H2 for 10?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, there is.
Yes.
They actually announced, but they never announced any features. So, of course, people asked, including me.
Yeah. Right.
And they said, we'll get back to you on that. we haven't announced that
yet. Have they gotten back to you?
They have not. They have not.
SDK, WDK, and EWDK. What the hell is that? I'm looking at your headline.
I assume no one needs to have those acronyms defined, so we'll just move on.
Okay, good. Thank you, because SDK, Software Development Kit. I know that.
Yes.
There you go. The Windows Driver Kit.
Windows Driver Kit.
Which I feel like used to be called the DDK for some reason.
It did.
Maybe I'm wrong on that.
Device Driver Kit. Yep.
Thank you. Okay, so WDK.
Yep.
And I have to be honest, I had to look up EWDK, because I was... What is that? It's the Enterprise Windows Driver Kit.
Okay. Yeah. Are Enterprise drivers different than the drivers for the rest of us?
There's an EWK, Leo. I mean, come on. No, I've never heard of it before. I have no idea.
No.
Yeah.
I think this will come up on the show. You know, there's this notion of like Teams certified devices and Teams room certified devices. I suppose in the enterprise Windows space, there is an extra level of certification or compliance you can obtain to be an enterprise Windows driver or whatever. I'm not familiar with this term. I don't know.
I wonder if it has to do with like configuration manager Intune stuff, maybe.
Interesting. So maybe there are components in a PC that can remotely manage and then centrally manage, right? That could be. Right. I don't know.
But the weird thing is about these three things, they're already out, right? Like they're already that's available.
That's the news. So Microsoft has not announced this new version of Windows.
Oh.
But these things are available now to developers, I guess, in final form. These are not pre-release versions. These are the RTM, as we used to call them, versions of these things. So this is the way Microsoft does things these days.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the next story, story is the one I think is pretty huge.
Visual effect, a new visual effect. What's that?
Well, I use the term visual effect because the real term is material, and I'm not sure that's something most people understand. So when you think about the different window and control surfaces that could appear visually in an application, Microsoft uses this term material to describe the look and feel of that thing, and they have different materials, right? So acrylic, I think, was the first one that shipped with the original, back in Windows 10. There's something called smoke, which is used so when you have a dialogue that pops up on front of a window and then the back of the window is kind of grayed out, that effect is called smoke, which I had never heard of. And then the more recent one, which is in Windows 10 and 11, is called mica. Mica is an opaque. No, it's not. I'm sorry. It's actually translucent, but it's only subtly translucent, and it has kind of a matte look to it, I guess. Apparently, people thought it was a little too subtle. So, starting with Windows 11, or only in Windows 11, I should say, developers would be able to choose between a mica, the classic mica, if you will, and mica alt, which is lets through a little bit more color. So it's subtly more colorful, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the color is bleeding through from whatever's behind. So maybe it's your wallpaper, whatever background color you have, or there are other windows behind there. You know, you can move it around and the colors will kind of shift, but it's subtle. It's not, you know, obnoxious. And we have spent more time on this than it deserves. The only thing I will say about this is if you're a developer, I think the one pertinent bit of information here, other than its existence, is that Mica Alt is not only available on Windows 11, meaning that if you target this in an app and you display it on Windows 10, you won't see it. It's only supported by Windows App SDK 1.1 and higher, meaning it's not available to the Universal Windows platform. So this is what they call a WinUI 3.0 feature, if you will, a UX feature. Universal Windows platform only supports WinUI 2.0, or 2, whatever version. So this is kind of, you know, we're moving forward here. UWP obviously is supported, but it's no longer being updated. So in meaningful ways with new features. So the new stuff we get, including this new material, will only be available not just on Windows 11, but also only if you target the Windows App SDK 1.1 or higher.
But does it have any way to call a satellite if I get in a crash?
Guys, I'm just going to say it is no dynamic island. That's all I'm going to say about it. That's
Actually, I got all excited when you said visual effect. It's just a different color. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, color.
Yep.
No, it's a different level of translucency.
It's a hue. It's a hue. Okay. You happy now?
Well, it's it doesn't have any inherent color of its own. It's bleeding through color in the back. Well, actually, I guess it does. It supports light or dark mode, so it would support whatever the window color is. But it also bleeds through color. So the colors you see there in that title bar are from the background.
No one cares.
Are they going to fix the problem with the... never mind. I don't want to.
No, don't even ask.
I don't want to become the Paul Thurrott of this show.
You do not.
Thank you. Cadillac
Thank
of
you
cars.
So much.
I did get a lot of calls on Sunday for people said, Windows says I have a virus.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, I figured out, it only took me a little while to figure out, that virus, that's Chrome, and it's okay. And Microsoft,
please update it.
Yeah, there was a virus definition that screwed
that up. Right.
And they fixed it. But boy, it caused a lot of consternation among my audience because they're not super sophisticated.
Yeah, but you should talk to them about Micah Alt. I mean, I think they would be interested in this.
But did you see the new color? I like it that you put it on Notepad, Paul.
Well, that's actually a Microsoft screenshot. I didn't go to the trouble of.
I like it that they put it on Notepad.
Yeah.
It's on Notepad, right? Isn't that?
Well, no, technically that's a custom app because it supports tabs.
It's just a tag.
Well, there's a whole thing in programming now, Windows. You can add stuff to the title bar area. So they're also demonstrating that there's a toolbar, whatever they're calling it, with a tab and buttons and things. And it's in the title bar area. This is something that's used to be super complicated and hard to do in Windows, depending on what framework you were using.
Well, that's nice.
All right. You can beat this topic to death, Mary Jo, if you want.
I can see that you're doing a good job of that.
Okay. So a material is a visual effect applied to a user experience surface that resembles a real-life artifact. In this case, what it looks like if you look at the world through Mica.
Yeah.
Not Mica Sargent. That thin
Mica Sargent. Yeah, he is pretty thin.
Yeah,
if you hold him up to the light, this is what it will look like.
I know about Micah because when I was a kid, we'd go see the pilgrim houses, you know, at Plymouth Plantations.
Yep, Sturbridge as well, yep.
And in the old days, especially in stagecoaches, they didn't have glass, so they put mica.
Right. That's right.
Because you could, if a thin enough sheet.
It was translucent, not transparent.
Right.
Right, and that's what this is. A lot of people screw those terms up, but yes.
You could say, driver, what type of time of day is it? Look through the mica. It'll be pink if it's morning.
Yep. Here's a color card you can hold up to the material and compare.
No it relation like to about... Mica Sargent or Formica, for that matter.
No.
That's right.
No.
or formic acid. So what else do we have to talk about?
Well, this one's even more interesting. So... If you've been following along, kids, with the changes to the accounts page and settings in Windows 11, you know that Microsoft is starting to add your Microsoft account information there, including such things as your Microsoft 365 subscription. If you have it, they're going to be adding your OneDrive subscription information if you're paying for OneDrive storage explicitly. And now, in the latest, I would assume this is the dev build, they've added your Xbox subscription information. So if you have Xbox Game Pass, PC Game Pass, presumably Xbox Game Pass Ultimate or Xbox Live Gold, now that will appear there as well. And the idea here is the same thing. You've got these Microsoft subscriptions or Microsoft services that you're paying for, and ultimately you're probably going to have to go to the web, honestly, but you can see the status of these things, where you are in the billing, you know, the billing process, how long it's going to last, how much you're paying, what credit card you're using, et cetera. So it's not in Windows 11 today. It will probably be in one of those moment updates that Mary Jo was mentioning that will come out over the next year.
Yeah. Moments.
See? Exciting. You thought that wasn't going to be exciting.
You're right.
I hope that I've lived up to your expectations.
Yes, you have. Thank you so much.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, man.
How are PC sales doing these days?
They're doing great, Leo.
Thank you, Paul.
You mean PC sales? No, they're doing terrible. We kind of expected this, right? There is a good news, bad news thing. Actually, PC sales are better than they were before the pandemic.
Right.
So that's good. In fact, the interesting thing about PC sales to me is we don't really have a full and accurate view of PC sales over the entire history of the PC industry. But if you look back over the past 15 years, there was a really clear up, crested, fall. And it was just kind of falling. And the question was always, when is this thing going to bottom out, right? Yeah. A lot of people thought PCs were going to disappear, that tablets were going to take over PCs. That never made sense to me. I always figured there'd be some plateau that we would hit, and then we'd kind of be even. But actually, as we move forward in time, what you see now is another up, 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 thanks to the pandemic. So we get 2-3 years there of improvements, and then down, down, down again. And what they're saying is that IDC and Gartner in this case, is that they don't expect PC sales to fall below pre-pandemic levels again, that the new normal, the new plateau, or whatever you want to call it, will actually be kind of a higher point. And that up and down, you know, wave effect is starting to look more normal over time in a way, right? Because, you know, again, we can't go back 25 years or whatever, but if we look back over the past 15 and look forward to the next two, it's not horrible. But the change that's occurred this year is, I don't remember the time frame, let's say something somewhere around February or so, IDC came out and said, you know, PC sales are going to fall this year, and then we expect them to return to normal next year, return to growth. And then Gartner came out a month or two later and said, you know, we don't think PC sales are going to do that great this year. They're going to fall again, you know, fall for 1 year, and then we think they're going to be back. So the thing that's changed now is IDC has come out and said, okay, so actually PC sales are going to fall more than we thought this year, but not double digit. It's still single digit number. And we actually think they're going to fall next year too, but not as bad again. So obviously when you're predicting the future, these things shift and we'll see how it goes, you know, over time. But and it's not just PC sales, I should say, too. I don't care so much about tablet sales, I guess, but IDC also expects tablet sales to fall over the next 2 years as well. And for whatever it's worth, PC sales, according to them, should be about double what the tablet sales are. So about 305-something million units. Is that this year? Yeah, this year. And then 156 or 157 million for tablets. So we'll see what really happens. I mean, yeah. I think it was IDC who said they expected that Windows Phone would overtake the iPhone by 2013, I think was the prediction. Does that sound accurate?
Was that them? I thought it was somebody else, but yeah.
I thought it was IDC, but I don't, okay, yeah. It doesn't really matter, but whoever it was,
yeah.
But
yeah,
you know, they're predictions. They're not,
right.
They're not facts. Right. So.
Right.
Okay. Could be worse.
Oh, this is exciting. I can't tell you.
Time of year.
Wait, and did you see the new naming system AMD is going to use on their 2023 and future mobile chipsets?
What are they going to call them? I'm confused by AMD's nomenclature.
Yes.
Oh, it gets worse.
Do you think it's better? It's worse.
Better is is a strong word. I will say the way they described this was, anyone, and they meant like non-enthusiasts, could look at these numbers and schemes and understand immediately what this meant. I said, okay.
No.
All right. That sounds good. No. So the issue is, first of all, AMD is doing great. So AMD, I didn't write this in my article. I want to say something like they've sold 59% more Ryzen processors this year than they did the previous year, something like that. Like they're going gangbusters. They are, just like anyone else who has experienced this kind of success, is moving into new product segments, right? So like Qualcomm is creating chipsets for VR headsets now, for wearables, for all these things that are not smartphones, right? Mm-hmm. AMD is making chipsets for different types of PCs, right? So you have like ultra-efficient PCs, you have like the mainstream PCs, you have high-performance PCs, and then you have really high-performance PCs that are aimed at creators and game, you know, gaming PCs, that kind of thing. The problem is they have they have so many product families. So if you're familiar with Intel, which is a little more common, you know they have Core i3, Core i5, i7, and i9, although those are actually pretty rare. AMD has Athlon, Silver, and Gold, which are kind of like their Pentium now, I guess. And then they have Ryzen 3, 5, 7, and 9, just like Intel has with the Core chipsets, right?
Okay.
But they also have like Zen and Zen Plus architectures. Yeah. There are literally
Threadripper.
Seven of them. Yep. There's seven different architectures. Gosh. They have upper and lower models within segments. So they have like 3 and 3+. They have 1 and 1. You know, it's crazy. And then they have the form factor TDP things, right? So with Intel, I've been talking about this recently, where U series is 15 watt, P series is 28 watt, H series is 56 watt. Of course, AMD. They have 9 watt, 15 to 28 watt, 15 to 28 watt ultra. They have 35 plus watts, and they have 55 plus watts. And so They all have different brands. It's like ECUH5HX. You know, so
oh my god,
you tack all this stuff together and you have a product, right? So this is imaginary. This is a future product that doesn't exist. But the example they use is they have a Ryzen 5 7640U. So the Ryzen 5, the 5, is where it sits in the segment, right? So it's a 5 series. So it's like a Core i5 equivalent, we'll call it. 7 is generation. They call it portfolio model year, but it's generation. So Intel is on 12th gen this year. They're about to transition to 13th gen. So the 7, the first number, means it's a 2023 chipset. It hasn't come out yet, but they're imagining it. Market segment 6 means it's the upper level of the 5s because they have to split the 5s into 2. So there's 2 3s, crazy. 2 5s, 2 7s, and 2 9s. Well, actually, it doesn't matter. Roughly. With the 5, there are 2 5s. It's the upper level of the 5. So there's the X5XX and the X6XX. This is an X6. 6 series. All right. So architecture, Zen 4. At least that's, you know, 4 is Zen 4. 0 is the lower model segment, lower model within the segment. If it said 5, I don't know why it's 0 and 5, but if there was a 5 instead of a 0, it would be the upper model within the segment. And then U tells you where it sits in the TDP rating, so it's right in the middle. It could be a 15 to 28 watt part, or what they call a premium ultra-thin chip. So there you go.
It's, now, the hysterical thing is you would think Paul was making up something intentionally obtuse and obscure. Right. This is the example provided by AMD.
Yep.
Yeah, and I read it off of a chart. And if you're listening to this in your headsets, if you haven't given up on us by now, I don't know what you're doing. That would make no sense to anybody. But the product would be the Ryzen 5 7640U. Right?
You need something on the wall to decipher this.
You do. Yeah.
Yeah. So I will say I don't understand Intel's naming conventions as deeply as this either. So I couldn't – well, actually, I just bring something up. So, for example, like I can tell – obviously, when you look at it, you have an Intel Core i5 dash. You know it's a Core i5, right? So that helps right there. The problem is, depending on where you are after that, you get lost in the mix. I don't know all of the things for the 12th gen, but this particular computer is an i7. 1260p. Now, I know the P means the P series. It's 28 watt part. Very common these days. Now, all of a sudden, right, in laptops. But the 1260 bit, I don't know. There are other i7s probably, not just U's and H's, but probably within P, it's possible. There are or could be others. And then next to it, you also get like a clock speed rating, right? So this is a 2.1 gigahertz part. At least there's less numbers. I mean, I know, looking at it, I know it's an i7. Okay, easy. 12th gen, got that.
Yeah.
P-series, good. I know it's 28 watts. But as far as the other numbers, this is not a great example.
Is it because we deal with Intel more, and so we're just kind of more familiar with this?
Yes, but it is. Yes. No, that's fair. Yep, it is.
This is crazy, though. I mean, I almost feel like I should write a program to decipher these.
And the way they describe it is like, oh, no, this is... this is going to make decoding this easy.
Yeah.
It's like you need a – it's like in my living room, we have two giant posters. Well, they're actually on cloth fabric, but they're posters of all of the types of wine and all of the types of food and how they cross-reference each other. Like, you know, this wine's good with this food, that kind of thing. This is like that. You know, it's like I want to buy an Ultrabook. I don't care if it has integrated graphics. I want the best possible battery life. You know, it's like you need a – you know, 7 for next year, 640E.
I'll tell you why this is good. You could just name it Pentium or Ultium or something.
Right.
But in the name, everything you need to know about this chip is in the name. Admittedly, it's 7640U, but
this is like,
it's in the name. It's all there.
A BMW model number, right? You're like, I have an X Drive 4, I don't even know what the numbers are anymore, 435iX, you know, and it's like, okay, is it a coupe? Is it a four-door sedan?
If you were an aficionado, you would know. And
right.
I guess that's the merit in this is at least the name tells you what you need to know. It's not a brand.
If you are an AMD nerd, you're going to love this. And now you and your other AMD nerd friends can have conversations that make sense to nobody. So good luck with that.
But the idea that this is supposed to be for normal people is just...
They literally said that this would make it easier for... I was like, I don't... don't think so.
I can't. I feel like most normal people are like me. When you're looking for a new laptop, you don't even go by the name of the chip, because a lot of times the name of the chip is meant to obscure what you're getting.
Normal people don't are not saying chip names or anything.
No,
like that.
Well, this nobody's is actually like, why is this a Pentium Gold
say,
thing?
Yeah,
is
I want an HP Elite. Blah, blah,
so blah, yeah. Right? Even in Intel's product line is arguably simpler. I could be wrong about that, but I kind of think it's simpler. Mm-hmm. At least the PCs you'd go to see at Best Buy, what? But and yet, like I said on a couple of shows ago, there they have. They used to have. If you got a laptop, you were getting a U series something. You're going to get a Core i5 probably or a Core i7, and that was kind of the end of the conversation. It was going to be a U series. All of a sudden, with the 12th gen, I'm seeing more P series than anything. This is a thing that did not exist 8 months ago or 6 months ago, and I'm seeing a lot of H series, which is high performance, often tied to dedicated graphics. I'm seeing way more of that this year than I saw in previous years. So U series, which used to be the mainstream choice, the one you didn't have to think about, it was just the normal chip, is actually much less common now than ever before. And P series, which didn't exist ever before, is suddenly the most common thing in the world. And honestly, I guess it get, better performance. Maybe this new architecture gets worse performance. Apples to apples, and this is why they had to do that, amp up the TDP. But it also, when you do that, you get worse battery life. And so there's a sacrifice there. And this is absolutely something that normal people don't understand. This is like, I'm not a hardware guy. I don't even understand it. Normal people will absolutely not understand
it.
But then for normal people, they put words on the box. And that's all that matters.
Well, right. I mean, hopefully, I mean, I don't know how PC makers communicate this. Like PC or HP has like an NV line that they are targeting creators. Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. And they have H series processors. Dedicated graphics are optional. All right. That makes sense. But like I said, like the mainstream stuff, ThinkPads or Yogas, whatever they are. That if you look at like a year ago, like 90% of that basically, or 85% was U series. This year, it's like a jumble of choices. I've even seen PCs come with a choice of U or P series.
Wow.
What?
But you, like, you asked me, do you have a H processor or a U processor? Mm-hmm. And right. I know it's an H because I, looked, but I don't know what that means. You know what it means because that's your job. But I just bought, it's a 12th gen. Good. And then then I had to decide i5 or i7, right? So,
well, if you're going to render a video, if you're going to work in Photoshop, if it has dedicated graphics, you could even play games on it. You can make these arguments. If you're a heavy Excel user, that would probably make a difference, honestly.
Doesn't, though? There are other things that make a difference, too, like how much RAM there is. People understand that.
Oh, my God, yes. I would rather have 16 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, that makes more of a difference.
Than 8 gigs on a P series. Every day. Yeah. Every day. Yep.
Yep.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. No, this is complicated. I feel like this shouldn't be so complicated. When you buy a car, if you bought a BMW, you probably have like multiple engine choices. But honestly, having like 8 or 9 engine choices on a car is stupid. Like that would just, people would just walk away confused by that. Well, I want this engine. Okay, I know exactly the engine I want. Oh, did you want 4-wheel drive? Oh, no. You need to get one of the other engines. Like, what? Okay, hold on a second. And then you get into those conversations where there's these things that rely on other things in the car. And that's what happens to computers.
Here's what you need. And AMD apparently handed these out when they did this announcement.
Oh, that
in Austin.
Is beautiful. That is beautiful.
It's a wheel. There and you spin the wheel.
A literal decoder wheel.
It's a decoder wheel. Yep. Tell you what you're getting. Actually, that's quite clever.
Guys.
Yeah. That is.
Yeah, no, that is clever. Get used to this naming convention because they've mapped this out at least 5 years. And they're like, this thing scales. This is what we're using.
It's engineers. Remember, these are engineers.
Right.
Yeah. Right. That's why that thing looks like a slide rule.
It does. It looks like a circular slide rule. That's there's a reference a lot of people won't get.
Sorry, I'm old.
Yeah. Circular slide rule. X1 Fold. We talked about this last week.
So yes. I blurted this out without thinking, but yes, last week, Asus announced a ZenBook that is a large screen device like this. And you said, hey, how come the X1 Fold isn't this big? And I was like, it's going to be. And now it is. I'm sorry about that.
Were you embargoed?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I didn't realize
No,
that.
It's okay.
Well, I had read about it somewhere, so I am not embargoed.
There you go. I read about it as well somewhere, and that's why I said that.
Yeah. It was already public. Somebody did a review of
good.
It. There so you, oh, you're not in trouble.
So this gets really
somebody
interesting.
Else is.
I would say, so when you think about folding displays on phones, right, there are two basic form factors. There's the kind of flip phone form factor, which is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. It turns into a normal phone when it's open, and then it turns into a little compact case. You could fit it in a pocket or whatever. That's cool. But to me, like the cooler one is you're holding it, and it is a phone, but then you open it up, and it's like an iPad mini or a miniature tablet size. And I think like that is – that gets into the – you can replace two things with this one thing category. And I find that to be very interesting. So if you think back to the original ThinkPad Fold or any of the few folding PCs that we've seen, they're basically, they were 13-inch designs opened. But when you had them in that clamshell mode, it was kind of like an 11-inch laptop. So you would slap a keyboard down over half the screen and it would be like a tiny little, you know, Casio keyboard size thing. Like it wasn't full sized. And it was like, okay, like, this is cool because it folds. Like, I get that. It's attractive. But as a laptop, as a usable device, like, this thing is not very practical. So last year or whenever time, sometime last year, I reviewed that thing. And I was like, you know, this is an interesting glimpse at the future. But this doesn't replace two devices. So this is just it's smaller in two dimensions, but it's thicker because it's folded in half this way. Is that more portable? Maybe. But then when you use it, it's like less. It's like using a what do you call that thing? The Surface, the little Surface. That Mary Jo had one of these things. What's it called? Go, Surface Go.
The Go. Yeah.
Right?
Oh,
it's a little too small, right?
Yeah.
So then not just ThinkPad or Lenovo, but also Asus looked at this and said, okay, well, what if we make this thing like 16, 17 inches, right? And that way, when you fold it in the typical clamshell, it's a laptop, like a 13-inch laptop, basically.
And you can even snap full the keyboard over
you
the
can snap a keyboard
over the screen in the bottom half.
That's right.
Yeah.
So now you're using a traditional form factor in the right size. When you pop that thing open, it's like this. You can take the keyboard off and use it like, you know, Bluetooth wireless, which is neat. It's a gigantic screen. It works portrait or landscape. Mm-hmm. Neat. It obviously would be awesome for movies, but if you're doing Excel or video editing or all those things we talked about earlier, the creative tasks, you have this giant canvas. Like, actually, this is really cool. Now, I guess it doesn't technically replace two devices, but it's still, well, I guess you could say it replaces an external display, you know, maybe, yeah. Right? Use
Isn't
it like a laptop
problem,
right on the go.
But Windows isn't optimized for this, right? Like, isn't that always the problem with these kind of devices that you know, like you sit it up in a certain like posture, but it doesn't really automatically recognize that you're using it in a different
way. It should.
Way.
I mean, it should.
Should it?
So, yeah, because
Lenovo optimize it because Windows itself, I don't think, is optimized for that, right?
No, Windows has its own stuff, but you're right that Lenovo also adds their own utilities, right? So if you think about this giant screen, you popped it open, it's not folded anymore, right? If you rotate it in space and you're like, I want to use this portrait, or you rotate it and I want to use it landscape, it will adjust, right? It does that.
Yeah.
Windows 11 does this neat effect when you take the keyboard off of that screen. There's an animation where the screen kind of pops in and pops out.
Yeah.
And then it adjusts to what the new thing is, right? So now it's treating, instead of the little half a screen, you're getting the big full screen, even if it's folded, or even if it's, folded, right? Mm-hmm. So this is interesting. I mean, I think... The killer here is going to be the price. These things are like $2,500 to start, but it's first gen at this size. And I think the folding screen stuff is getting into the proven stage. I think prices are going to come down. I think you're going to see them move this type of thing to lower end product lines as well over time. So this is the beginning, but I mean, I wouldn't spend $3,000 on one of these things right now, but right. I got to say, I'm 55 years old, I look at this bigger screen and I'm like, I could carry this around like it's a 13-inch laptop, slightly heavy 13-inch laptop, but okay. And then I can pop it out and have a 16-inch or 17-inch display. Yeah, that's actually really interesting to me. Mm. You know, and it's a full computer. It's not like low-end parts and no RAM. And, you know, this thing's 32 gigs of storage, 32 gigs of RAM, terabyte of storage, 3 USB C Thunderbolt 4 ports, two of those are Thunderbolt, one's just USB. You know, Dolby Atmos speakers. I mean, just for watching movies in a hotel room, something I'll probably never do again in my life.
What?
It would be
Why not?
Well, for like a, but Well, I mean, for like, I don't know if I'm ever going to travel for work again. We'll see how life goes. Okay. But
it's just to watch. You can watch movies in other places. Anywhere.
Yeah.
I like this. I thought this.
I do too.
What about the crease? Yeah. So this was shown at IFA, and everybody knew about it last week. Okay. But you have one? Is that what it is?
Well, no, I had the previous gen one. So the previous gen one was a 13, I think it was 13, I'd have to look it up. I think it was 13.3. So folded, it was kind of like an 11-inch thing. So I was never going to use the thing folded. But you could open it up. There's a kickstand. The keyboard comes off, and you could use it externally. You could use any Bluetooth.
But this you would use folded and unfolded probably, right?
Either one would be fine because that keyboard's full size. It's a track point. It's wireless.
I'm very tempted by this. What about the crease, though? Is it a...
That's the thing. I'm trying to get at.
So I haven't seen it now for a few months. I mean, and of course I had the first gen version, but honestly, I was surprised by how good that was. I didn't have it over a long period of time. I can't speak to its reliability over, you know, months or years, obviously, but the crease thing was not an issue. It's not like it bunched up or, you know, had a visible line or anything like that. It was
It's not the problem you're going to have with the Surface Neo, which was two screens and a hinge.
With a big bezel in between. This is, so price is the disadvantage. It's $2,500.
Well, yeah. So
and you have to buy the keyboard.
It's an X1, right? So if you're familiar, we just talked about BMW, AMD, and Intel model line. Yeah. So if you're familiar with ThinkPad, you know that X1 is the high end,
right?
And usually it's Carbon, which is the laptop, or Yoga, which is the you know, the convertible. And now they have Nano, and now this is a fourth model in the X1. Family fold for, you know, the folding designs. And, I, you know, they're not saying this yet. It's early days. But, you know, if you think about Samsung and what they're doing with folding phones, they're basically saying, hey, guys, these are the future. These things will replace Note and the S series over time. These things will replace all phones over time. I would be surprised if Lenovo and other PC makers didn't start talking like that for laptops. Because it's, again, not it's not two in one, but it's sort of two in one. Like, you have a normal laptop or you have this giant screen. And, you know, if Mary Jo and I were at a work event, we're sitting in the audience, you know, we can use it like a laptop. But if we go to the press room, you could pop that thing open, and now you have this expansive display. And that is very interesting to me.
I guess I worry about weight and battery life. Those are the two things I would worry about.
No, you should. Right. So I can't speak to that stuff. I mean, hopefully, I assume I'll get one of these for review at some point.
I'm very interested.
Very interesting. I am too. Yeah. The other one was just a few too many compromises. I'd have to go look at my review. I haven't done that, but a few too many compromises. And this one, it's like, okay. You know, like that looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that it was embargoed. I'm sorry if I got you in trouble.
No, I did. No. No one got in trouble. If you went back
you were
and listened
funny.
To what
no,
I
no,
actually,
you acted I, funny about it.
I think I said something like, I suspect, I think I said like Lenovo has one coming too.
I had seen it. So I knew that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is why I don't do embargoes or NDAs. So that way, when I open my mouth.
Well, me blurting it out is the reason NDA. I will no longer be doing this. But
you can't blame. No, because I have no NDA with them. So I'm.
Yeah. You know, like prolific leaker Paul Thurrott once again blurted out. Like, you know.
I swear I saw a whole article about it with pictures and everything.
I'm sure you're right. I'm counting on it, Leo.
Yeah, no, that's true. And isn't it true, though, if you have an NDA that once somebody else leaks it and you could have learned it legitimately from another source, you're no longer
that's
bound?
It's a gray area. We usually go back to the company and say, hey,
really?
Publication leaked it. And sometimes they'll say, we're asking you to stick to this agreement. Because the leak that might have come out might not be the full thing. And it's... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, they're still trying to have surprises or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
You try to do the right thing, right? I mean, basically. Right.
No, sometimes sometimes we can't even say we're under NDA, right? Like, we had, and Microsoft was like, you cannot tell people you have this. Like, you can't even hint that you have it.
I think more often the case than not.
Yeah, but we like when you'd say to us, so are they going to announce this next week? Like it's that like some people are saying that we couldn't even like answer because we're like, maybe. Right.
It's
a little weird. Yeah.
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 Okay.
And speaking of complicated version numbers.
We've been having fun with this one. USB 4 version 2.
Version 2.0. Let's
0.0.
Get a point in there.
Is that 4.2.0?
I think that 2.0 might be important because this is actually a pretty big jump. So if you're familiar with Thunderbolt 3 to Thunderbolt 4 and USB 4, both of which are, I got to be careful, 40 gigabit per second data transfer rate, right? Like Thunderbolt 3 was 20. There are various versions of USB 3 something that are 5, 10, or 20, right? Yeah. USB 4 version 2, which is not Thunderbolt 5, by the way, is going to be 80 gigabits per second of data transfer using a USB-C connector. The interesting thing here, other than the stupidity of the names, is that it will actually be able to achieve those speeds with previous generation cables. So if you have a USB 4 compatible cable, it will apparently deliver 80 gigabits if you have a USB 4 version 2.0 port on a computer. So the name is terrible. USB 5, too simple. You know what? Why can't these numbers just be big? We're also getting to the point we were at with USB-A where we have multiple speeds and capabilities now that are possible through this port, the USB-C port. If you think back in the day, they used to remember certain PC makers would color the port to indicate what it was. Like I think Lenovo used yellow USB ports for USB 2, maybe when it was brand new, or blue, I think was one of the colors. I just described a PC. Yeah, actually it was the Fold. So here's the Fold will come with three USB-C ports. Two will be Thunderbolt 3. One will be USB 3.2 Gen 2. What is going on? Why can't they all be the same? There are reasons, but like that stuff is kind of weird. And so that will always be weird because now with USB-C, you could have, let me see if I'm counting this right, 3, 4, 5, and soon 6 different things that could be. Something like that. It's complicated. So you thought AMD was dumb, but see, AMD's just fitting right in there. They're right, just landing right where everyone else is.
The USB group says, don't worry. It'll all be obvious because there'll be icons on your laptops and your cables that will tell you what's what. Just like it's been all along.
Yeah, so let me tell you how that works. Sometime between the age of 40 and 50, you lose the ability to see those things.
They're not there, Paul. You're not. It's not you. They're not there.
So once you make something like a light gray one-point font on a dark gray computer.
You can't see it.
Heads up. You can't see it.
I'm just looking.
So,
This Dell has no indications at all what that Type-C connector is. You have to know.
God forbid I move this thing around.
And the cables.
Remember, Microsoft did that accessibility kit where you could color code which thing went into which port, right? I'm like, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but they don't. Nobody does it.
Look, it's probably not a big deal for most people, but you could run into a deal where you plug in even a phone. And it won't charge at full speed on one port, but it will on the other or something like
Trust
that.
Trust me, it is a big deal for most people. People are extremely confused because some cables work, some don't. Right. Some ports do things that others don't. It's extremely confusing.
I do this almost every single day. I'll plug something into something, and I just wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Is it going to work? No one knows.
Yeah.
The mystery.
This will be fun.
Could be. Maybe it'll work. Maybe not.
Things interesting.
Yeah. It's a wonderful world. I think I have a diagram here that might.
This is what, you know, this is only a small chunk of why the tech industry is ridiculous and needs to be hemmed in.
Yeah.
But I remember someone making an argument about a smart TV and how great it was. Like, you could have a computer in your TV, you know? Have you ever used a computer? Hey, and by the way, now that we all have computers in our TVs, does anyone remember when TVs used to have an on-off button and you turned it on and it just came on? Now these things boot up. It's like there's a BIOS thing that happens. The screen resolution changes. This menu comes on. It does all this stuff. It's just a display.
Yep.
You know, we let the idiots win the war. Like, what are we doing? Yeah.
Here you go. Here's
there it is.
Here's a little simplified. Mm-hmm. If they only put these logos on, you'd know Or you just look for the lightning. Or here's from Adafruit. Here's a description of everything you need to know about USB.
This is horrific.
See? And this doesn't include USB 4 Type 2.
Right.
So throw that out. Start all over. It's a new world.
This turns into a problem for nobody. Well, for normal people, it's probably not a problem. But if you're a power user, you know, you buy some computer that has Thunderbolt 4 ports, and you're like, well, I'd like to drive two 4K displays at 60 hertz. Yeah, have fun with that. It's supported, you know, but have fun doing that.
Torn,
and there's ways to obviously get a dock.
I've torn my hair out.
Yeah.
We had a Dell display that looked like it was a Type C Thunderbolt, but it was a USB display, USB-C display. So I had to find that particular kind of cable, which is unusual.
Sure.
And I had, normal people come up against this all the time. Nothing works.
Actually, so I'm using a 4K USB-C webcam that I just got from HP. I have connected it to a HP conferencing monitor, which I love. It basically has a built-in USB hub of some kind. So there's two USB-A ports on the side. There's two up in the back. There's other ports. You know how hard it is to get up, and you can't see what's going on up there. Mm-hmm. The first thing I tried to do was say, well, if I want to get 4K on this thing, I wonder if I have to use a certain speed USB port. I do. And if you don't, you'll get that thing where it says USB device not recognized every once in a while, which is exactly what I want with a device I use every single day. So then I had to go to the documentation for this monitor to figure out which of those ports are, if any, that speed. And that user guide does not have that information. So I did that thing I described earlier, because I literally do this all the time. I'll just plug it in and see what happens. You know, and it's just, well, first find the plug in the dark that's like, you know, angled up like this, trying to get under the thing. But this is what we've done to ourselves in our business.
I think it's the way of the world. Just look at the variety of mask wearing choices.
You know what? We're worried. Yes. We're worried there's going to be an insurrection. So what we're going to do is we're just going to keep you guys busy.
Elon Musk told his lawyer, hold off on the Twitter thing. I want to see if there's going to be a World War III. Putin's giving a speech tomorrow.
Yeah.
This is a sign on the MTA in Boston. Mm-hmm. This is an actual sign. Masks are encouraged, but optional. It says it's on the New York subway.
Oh, that's
we have
actually
the same
New
thing.
York
how to wear
yes.
masks?
That is
New yes. You do you, because it's only over his nose, not his mouth. Yes, let's respect each other's choices.
Ours is like this is how not to do.
Yeah,
it.
No, but no, in Boston, masks are encouraged but optional. And you know what? Respect everybody else's weird mask choices.
You know, I don't think anyone is respecting anyone else's choice. I think what's happened is we've just given up.
Yeah, that might be it.
I used to hate you for not wearing a mask. Now I'm just going to take a nap. You're tiring me.
I'm exhausted.
I can't get into it. I just don't even care.
I was noting at the Apple event, which was held indoors for the first time in 2.5 years, very few masks and no masks on any of the Apple executives. None. Zero.
So actually, did you notice this? I have a little theory about this Apple event. If you look back at the last whatever number of events that they did during the pandemic, there were all these like whiz-bang, like zooming through space, and now we're going to go down floors and blah, 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 blah. They did like these really quick transitions. They were still all around the campus and all around the planet, actually.
And there was one on a rock,
But they got rid of those big transitions, and I'm thinking they're starting to dumb these things down. So because they're going to be back on a stage someday, and I think they went so high tech,
work you back to the
presentation quality was so high. I think I don't know how you go back to a guy on a stage without it being weird.
I think maybe
you know?
They don't. Yeah. Honestly, I think maybe this is it for.
I think,
but they toned that down dramatically. Like dramatically.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're reading the tea leaves.
He is.
I mean, listen, I like a slow motion Craig Fitter eating as much as anybody, whatever his name is. But
oh yeah, they didn't do that, did they?
The Bionic Man thing.
this one was, you know what? That was for the developer conference, and they're geeks and they like those kind of jokes. This was, I think, also a little more buttoned down because it was for the general public. Maybe that's the other reason.
All right. Okay, fair enough.
Hey, I want to take a little break and talk to you about a honeypot.
Not a literal honey pot.
It is. Well, there's no honey in this honey pot. Well, unless you're a bad guy, in which case you may go, hey, there's something good in there. This is a canary. Canary from Thinks. This is our sponsor for this segment. This is a little appliance. We just, you know, it's plugged into the wall for power and into our Ethernet. And it shows up on our network not as a canary. It shows up as a, in this case, I've configured it to be a NAS, but it could be anything you want. It could be a router. It could be a switch. It could be a SCADA device, SCADA device. It could be a Linux box. It could be a Windows server. You can have all the ports turned on like a Christmas tree. You could have just select ports. These are identical. This one's set up to look like a Synology NAS, and it's the MAC address for Synology. It's got the DSM login, just the real thing. Attackers don't look at this and go, oh, stay away. No, they go, hey, there might be something on there. The other thing you can do with this is the Thinkst Canary, is create canary tokens, little tripwires you spread around your network, files, PDFs, docs, Excel files that look, again, that look valuable. Like I have some Excel files on our network, I won't tell you where, that say things like payroll information, employees, that kind of thing. A hacker sees that, they cannot resist. They're going to open it. But here's the beauty. The minute they do, you get an alert with all the details. This is a big problem now, is a company, you know, breaches are every day. There's another breach. And often what happens is, oh, we were breached 6 months ago. We didn't know about it. We do now. Oops, sorry. On average, it takes a company 191 days. 191 days to realize it's been a data breach. That's why you put these all over your network. This is defense in depth. Attackers are sneaky. They're prowling around. Why do they live on the network so long? They want to look for everywhere you do your backups. They want to exfiltrate any information they can. When they broke into Sony Pictures Entertainment, they got all sorts of information. And then they triggered the ransomware, right? This is the new way of being. They'll look at Active Directory and see what file servers or file shares there are. This canary can be on your Active Directory. They'll look for documents. They'll try default passwords against network devices and web services. They'll scan for open services on the network. They will find your canaries. And then when they attack, when they investigate, they give themselves away. That's beauty. The canary tokens work the same way. They try to open the file. You get an alert. And by the way, an alert any way you like it. No false alarms, just the alerts that matter via email or text message. You get with Canary, you get a console. They'll show up there if you want. You can use Slack. They support webhooks, so you can use a whole bunch of different stuff. They support Syslog. A lot of people like that. There's an API. You could write your own, roll your own. Data breaches happen. You know they're going to happen. You've got the perimeter of defense, but you also need this defense in depth, a honeypot on your network, the Thinkst Canary, built by people who have trained companies, militaries, and governments about how to break into networks. They know. They took that knowledge to build the Canary. They're deployed all over the world. One of the best tools against data breaches. If you go to canary.tools/love, you can see all the love. Many CISOs, CIOs, IT professionals have given the Canary over the years on Twitter. Lots of positive tweets. You can also go to canary.tools/twit and get some. I'll give you an idea on the pricing. Let's say you wanted five. You know, some banks might have hundreds, casino operations, places where you've got lots of places to protect. Small business like ours might have four or five on the network. For five, $7,500 a year. You get the five canaries. Anything goes wrong, somebody sits on them, whatever, they replace them immediately. You get your own hosted console. You get upgrades. You get support. You get maintenance for the whole year. And by the way, if you use the code TWIT in the How Did You Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off that price. And you'll get it forever for as long as you use canaries. And you will always want to have canaries in your network. I'm happy to have this. You don't even notice it. Truth is, as long as nobody's roaming my network, I'm not going to get any alerts. So it's nice and quiet. We know you're going to love it, but if you're not happy for any reason, you can always return your canaries. They have a 2-month money-back guarantee for a full refund. So you got two whole months to try this. Canary, C-A-N-A-R-Y, canary.tools/twit, the offer code TWIT, for 10% off for life. Just put that in the How Did You Hear About Us box. Really love this. canary.tools/twit. Every network should have a few canaries.
Don't forget the offer code TWIT so that they know you heard it here on Windows Weekly. On we go with the show. Let me see what's what do you want to talk about next? I took us kind of far afield with that mask thing. How about HoloLens?
Speaking of things that cover your face.
Yes.
Yeah.
Last we heard the Army had a, what, 100,000 unit order? Then they then they expressed some dissatisfaction.
5,000.
5,000. Okay. But it was a multi-billion dollar order, right?
Yeah, well, they originally did 120,000 headset order.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars. Now what's next?
$22 billion.
Wow. $22 billion. Well, so, okay, that's over. That's the
over
possibility
10 years.
Over 10 years. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The last we heard in the fall was the Army wasn't too happy about the status of these IVAS headsets, which are based on HoloLens.
These are for combat.
And that they're pushing back.
Right? These are
they're for training, combat. They're
I saw a picture.
They're basically meant
of
for
a poor
rehearsal
soldier
and training.
This is having to wear one of these. It doesn't look comfortable, but I guess they wear night vision goggles too, right?
Yeah.
This is a heads up display to give you a situational awareness, right?
Right. Yeah. I'd like to see a demo of what this experience is like.
Because me too.
These are not off the shelf HoloLens headsets, right? They're customized.
You can see his eyes through the military. So, you know, I guess they would, for him, it's like he's wearing sunglasses with a heads up display, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Right. It looks pretty big.
It looks like he's got a Kinect strapped to his forehead.
So
we'll see. I think this is just, the Army didn't hate it, and they're taking shipment of 5,000 of them. And then they'll get back to us and tell us what they think in a formal way about the platform.
Well, like you said, though, so last year the conversation was, this is not meeting our needs. And I sort of wondered if this wasn't falling apart. But they're about to receive their first batch of these. So and the Army has cleared it.
But there is an I think I remember from last time, there's an advocate inside the Army who's all in on this.
Yeah.
And he's pushing it, right?
Right. But it's based on field testing, and supposedly the results were positive. So, that's right. That was the story last year. This has been cleared because of positive results from field testing, supposedly. So, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe this will work out all right.
We'll see is right. I feel like there might be a little corruption or something.
There's a guy
in there. It was cleared by the Assistant Secretary for Acquisition, Douglas Bush. Right. I've cleared it for delivery.
Douglas C. Gates, no relation.
I don't know. I hate to have to wear something around. Somebody's shooting at you, and you got to wear this thing.
Yep.
I'm sure they wouldn't. They won't do it if it's not a useful tool. Let's put it that way.
Hopefully not.
I hope not. Microsoft 365. What's the latest?
Mary Jo, I cannot believe you have not written a story about the exciting new Teams Rooms.
I know. I've been remiss. No, someone else on ZDNet wrote it, actually, I think.
So I texted Mary Jo last night, and I said, is this new? And then 5 seconds went by, and I wrote it back, and I said, I know how Google works. I'm sorry. For some reason, I naturally thought, Mary Jo will just answer. She'll know this.
Yeah, she's Mary Jo Google.
And then I was like, what am I doing? Like, what? Seriously, you must see my text and be like, seriously, dude. Anyway, but I had to
do that. No, I'm not going to answer him right away because I know he's going to
give it a second. Give it a second. You can watch the dawn.
People do that on Twitter all the time. I'm too lazy to Google this. What do you think?
Yeah,
and that's like you send him a let me Google it for you URL. Yeah. Because I have heard of Teams Rooms, obviously.
Yes.
But I wasn't sure if, the pro SKU, I guess we'll call it, was a thing. But that actually is new. So I guess what has happened, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I believe what's happened here is they've decided to go with basic and pro SKUs. The basic SKUs are free. They're for small businesses. You can acquire up to 25 licenses. Mm-hmm. And then the paid SKU, the pro SKU, they're expensive. I think they're $40 a pop per month.
Yeah, they are.
Per user.
Yep.
And so Teams Rooms, as I understand it, is a we're going to call it a holistic ecosystem of software services and hardware, some of which come from third parties that are certified for mm-hmm. this. And the idea is, instead of going to a special meeting room that's set up with a Surface Hub display and is designed for this kind of thing, you can turn any meeting space into a hybrid meeting space mm-hmm. that involves people who are there physically and people who are connecting remotely. And they're, you know, as Microsoft does with Teams, they're trying to make it as good as possible no matter how you're connecting. Yeah. And the way you would do that, I think typically, and this is the thing I'm 100% not sure of, is you would have some device that's designed for this, like a portable Teams room mm-hmm. thing that you could bring to any meeting room or whatever and then turn it into
like a conferencing system. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But it's not locked to that room. Like you could actually carry it around if you
right.
wanted to.
Right. And all the, they have a lot of partners that make Teams Rooms mm-hmm. devices. That name is so terrible. Teams Rooms, both things ending with an S. Yes. So that the Basic and Pro are the new names replacing what used to be Standard and Premium, right? So they had these two SKUs before. I was reading a very good write-up about this on Cloudy with a Chance of Licensing.com, a site from...
That is awesome.
A site about licensing by my friend Rich Gibbons.
100% and, chance of licensing, by the way.
Yes. And he's got a nice little checklist there showing what you get with the Basic versus the Pro. And most people are going to have to get the Pro because you can't use Teams phones with the Basic, right?
The number one bit of feedback I've received, and I don't have a lot of enterprise guys on my site, as you might imagine, but there are guys who do this stuff for a living, and what they've been saying is stuff that used to be free has now shifted over to the paid half of the wallet.
Yes. Yep. And so they're going to make a lot of money, right? Because people are going to be like, oh, I can't use this basic SKU. Mm-hmm. I have to use the paid SKU now. And before you could do this more cheaply, and now you're going to have to go with $40 a month. So it's definitely not something for everyone. Not even many small businesses, I feel like, will go for this. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But
this is, so in keeping with that website name, which is beautiful, by the way, this is what I've been calling a licensable moment. And I've been talking about this not that the pandemic's over, obviously, but in the wake of the pandemic, for lack of a better term, Microsoft has mm-hmm. taken things that were kind of free during that time period and is now breaking them down into licensable moments, like things that mm-hmm. can be licensed as paid services. And this has become one, right?
Yep.
It's a licensable moment.
Yep. Like a teachable moment, except with licensing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. That's exactly right.
Microsoft is also killing its scheduler meeting coordination service.
Yeah. No one could pronounce
it. In some ways, I'm surprised about this, but some I'm not. Scheduler started out as something that a lot of people really loved called calendar.help. People were like, wow, this is really cool. Like instead of going back and forth over email with somebody trying to figure out a meeting time that we could both make, you could have had Cortana be your front end. And
by the way,
Cortana
is the important bit of this because Cortana was still an ongoing concern at the time.
It was
a long time ago. I was actually,
hi, Mary Jo wants to make an appointment. Do you have any openings?
Not say it, but do it by text. She acted like a personal assistant that would say, okay, Leo has these hours open. You have these hours open. What about this for both of you?
So we do this with Calendly and we embed links. Yeah. This is very popular. Yep. Yeah.
And Microsoft has another product that does this.
I'm sorry to interrupt. My company does this poorly. We have to schedule something for a webinar and we get emails from some people. Some people only email some of us. Then we get together in Teams and we discuss it. And then we discuss how we're going to reply. And then we go to email and we reply to the entire group to make sure everyone gets it. And then one of the people will say, I can't make it on that date. And we just do the whole thing again. And like we literally just went through this. This kind of a service would be very valuable. And it's weird to me that they're not making this a permanent Microsoft 365 thing.
So what they say, this is how they told people about this. They they put a little item in the message center in Microsoft 365, and it says, hey, by the way, we're killing this on September 1st, 2023. That's the only place they have said this. Scheduler costs $10 per user per month, so it's expensive, right? But a lot of people said, I was willing to pay for it, right? Because
this should just be built in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, right. So back before dealing with people outside of a company was a concern, which was never. But if you just pretend for a little bit that all we care about is people inside of a company, obviously there are features inside of Outlook that will show you a shared, you know, a shared calendar view to help you pick a time. Like, that's nice. But the trick is always you have to make meetings with people in the world. And this is where things get tricky, because then you get these permissions issues. Everyone uses different calendar solutions, you know, blah, 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 whatever. But this is useful. Like, this is necessary, I would even say.
Right. So two things about this. There is a feature in Outlook called Find Time. Like, you can read about this, findtime.microsoft.com. It's in Outlook. It's much more manual than the scheduler service was, right? But it does basically the same thing. Also, in the item saying they're killing the scheduler service, Microsoft said, by the way, we're thinking about taking some of the features that are in this and folding them into other products that we have. So you could see them folding that service, pieces of it anyways, into things like bookings, that bookings feature functionality that they have for Microsoft 365. Or you could see them putting it right in calendar, right in the calendar service. We'll see what they do with it.
Sorry, go ahead.
I feel like right now, there, like I've said this on the show recently when we were talking about Kaizala being eliminated, also the group messaging service. There's somebody right now going through Microsoft products going, how many people use this?
Actually, that's a really good example. Not that many, because,
right?
I was literally, the thing I was wondering was whether the expense of this was tied to the back end on Azure or whatever it was. And literally because so few people are using it, which is weird to me because you'd think this would be really useful. Well, I guess it's because you have to pay for it. This thing didn't justify its existence.
Yeah. I feel like they're belt tightening across Microsoft. They're looking at products like, we have 5 million different things in Microsoft 365. Could we do with 4 million instead of 5 million, right? And maybe we get rid of some of the services people aren't using, and we're going to save money, and we're going to reassign the people or fire them who have been working on these products, right?
Right. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think this is a good idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, it should just be part of Outlook.
Some other stuff. Right. It should be in Outlook or other Microsoft services that are in Microsoft 365. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah. And I'll put in a plug for Calendly.
Calendly works really well.
Works really well.
I use that a lot.
Yeah. And it has I think we're still using the free tier because it does enough anyway. Your method sounds horrible, Paul. I think you really need to look into something better than that.
It might be time for some automation.
Well, but as you guys sort of pointed out on the side a little bit, I mean, those automation tools cost something, right?
Right.
I mean,
they're not. Well, Calendly is free. I can't remember for a certain number. Okay. Yeah, there's a free tier.
Yeah,
Calend.
I just the amount of time we spent going back and forth to try to figure out a time is unbelievable. And eventually you just have a conversation internally where you're like, look, whatever they say, can we just do this? Like, we got to get this done.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And for one, you know, for some of the guys, they live in Europe and it's like, well, this is 10 o'clock at night for me.
Right.
It's like, yep.
Right.
We hear you, but.
Yeah.
You know.
But that might be. Yeah. That Calendly does not change that, by the way. There still will be time zone issues, I'm sure.
Sure.
I really want to get another ad in here. So if you don't mind, I will. Because I want to go see Motley Crue. Actually, this is appropriate because it's about Teams. If you use Teams, it's very rare that any company or person uses just one meeting solution, right? We use Zoom. We're using Zoom right now. We use Google Meet. Occasionally, I have to use Teams. The problem is the UIs are different in all of them. Invariably, when I join the Google Meets, I hang up. The very first thing I do. Because the hang up button is the same place as the unmute mic button on Zoom, and it's red. So I go, I need to unmute my. Oh, no, I guess not. And they're used to that now. When I join the meetings, company meetings, the Leo will show up briefly, go lean over to push a button, and then disappear. There is a better way. Unify Meeting from MIMO Monitors. I know you know the name MIMO Monitors. They make these great little USB monitors, 7 inches, 10 inches. They're really cool little side displays. And by the way, that's kind of how Unify Meeting was born, because what a great way to have your meetings going all the time
or your calendar, if you're not in a meeting, saying when your next meeting is going to be. This is brilliant. Unify simplifies your work life by combining your favorite video conferencing solutions, Teams and Zoom and Google Meet, into one simple user interface that's consistent across the board. It's an intuitive software solution that simplifies your work life by combining all those solutions into that single universal interface. So no more hanging up every time I sign in, right? Whether you're working full-time in the office or you're remote or you're hybrid, and that's part of the problem too is, you know, we're in all these different places. Unify keeps your video conferencing simple and intuitive. You can navigate between all your meetings easily without worrying about needing to keep track of the different apps or which app you got or which commands you need to use. You leave it on. It's always on your desktop, but it's never in your way. It displays your calendar at all times so you can see your daily schedule, but also all your upcoming video conference calls. When it's time for a meeting, the calendar's right there. You just tap it, and the app opens the appropriate software in the standard Unify Meeting UI. So it's really a simple thing that makes your life a lot better. Best way to do it is on a second or third display. So that you have, and I think this is brilliant, you have your normal display you're working with and a little 7-inch MIMO monitor on the side where Unify Meeting lives all the time. It's always there. So you've got like a little conference, little calendar display, and your conferences are there. And by the way, when you do it that way, on a second or third screen, you also see the original video conferencing applications UI on your primary screen, because sometimes you do want to, you know, do something that's specific to that app. Unify runs on Windows. It's PC compatible. You can just get the software only for $35.88. Gives you a whole year, $35.88. But if you buy any MIMO monitor, it's free. So I like that. So try Unify for your team at work or try it yourself. Unify, it's UNIFY meeting, MEETING, unifymeeting.com. Unifymeeting.com. Do the code WW. You get 25% off. And that is either 25% off a year's subscription or 25% off of any MIMO's 7-inch displays. That makes it really attractive. Simplify with Unify. Thank you, Unify and MIMO monitors. We really are thrilled. Unify Meeting. Go to unifymeeting.com. Offer code WW. 25% off. Really takes a lot of the pain out of all of these different platforms and so forth. Okay, now it's time for the Xbox segment with Mr. Paul. Well, I won't make sure you. It's either that or the Apple Watch segment, which I'd be glad to do.
All right, let's go forward to Xbox. So, a lot going on this week.
Okay.
In fact, there's some breaking news I haven't had a chance to look at too closely yet, but as expected, the first regulator has come back on the Microsoft acquisition of Activision Blizzard and said, we think we need to make some concessions here. And one of the concerns was that Microsoft would, in an anti-competitive way, make games not available to competition like the PlayStation, right? Which is what Sony is worried about. So Microsoft's reaction was It was the UK CMA, which is the Competition and Markets Authority. It's their antitrust body. Well, it's not all they do, but basically their antitrust body. So Phil Spencer and I think Brad Smith as well both kind of came out and said, look, we can agree to keep this, you know, these big games, not just Call of Duty, but some of the other big game franchises on PlayStation. I thought it was a little weird how specific they were. I think it was Phil Spencer who said, so we have an agreement in place where we're going to keep these games on, or, you know, Activision has an agreement that they're going to put the games on PlayStation for X number of years. We will agree to keep them on PlayStation for 5 more years after that. It's like, so wait a minute. Are you suggesting that after 5 years, you're going to take them away? So we'll see. I think there's going to be some back and forth on this, but this is the logical and obvious response. I think that Microsoft was waiting for someone to say this so they could make this as an offer. They didn't want to come out with it in advance because then Sony would say, well, 5 years isn't enough. Let's go to 10 years, whatever it is. So it doesn't make sense for Microsoft not to make Call of Duty and other big Activision Blizzard franchises available on PlayStation. It just doesn't make sense. Yes, they're going to be on Xbox Game Pass. Yes, they will be on Xbox Cloud Gaming, which is the game streaming part of it. That's big, you know, but Sony could come back and say, look, we want you to be on PlayStation, what's it called? PlayStation Now, I think, their version of the Game Pass. And, you know, and maybe the agreement there is we do that on the same terms that you do for other big blockbusters that may appear on Game Pass, something like that. So we'll see what happens. But this is the process working as far as I can tell. It's nothing to be freaked out about. I think everything's going to be fine. So, but this was, to me, this was like obvious. Like we were going to see this someday. So this has happened and there we are. At least twice in the recent weeks, there's been some mention, a rumor of a white version of the Elite controller. And I've talked about how terrible it looks. And now you can see it for yourself because Microsoft has announced it. It's not actually a next generation Elite controller. It is, in fact, a new lower end Elite controller. It's in the Series 2, which is the current series, meaning it doesn't have that screenshot button in the middle, which I don't quite understand. But it's called Elite Wireless Controller Series 2 Core, because we can't have simple names. And it's actually really different from the original Elite controllers because it doesn't have all the replaceable parts. So if you think about the way an Elite controller is today, you have like paddles you can add or take off. You have four different kinds of thumbsticks. There's two different kinds of D-pads. And then there's a thumbstick adjustment tool that lets you kind of raise or lower that. And this gets rid of almost all that. So it comes with a USB-C cable, and it comes with a thumbstick adjustment tool. And that's it. Other than that, it's basically an Xbox One wireless controller, which is weird to say. It has the kind of radar dish-looking D-pad that is one of the two styles from the original Elite controller. It has the Elite controller style grips on the wings or whatever that is. But it just has a standard set of thumbsticks, albeit ones that can be adjusted. So the difference is let me see if I can find the exact price of this. The original Elite controller, I believe was $299. They're actually lowering the price of that to $179. And then the core version, which is the new one, is $129. So it's about double the price of a normal wireless controller. Does not have the screenshot tool, which I think is weird, but it has the nice grips, the nice D-pad, and adjustable thumbsticks. So it's kind of an interim controller. I might actually consider getting one of these if I can get it in black. I don't like the white, but the Elite Wireless Controller Series 2, the normal one, is, I think, only in black, and I think this one's only in white, and I also do not get, but... Anyway, there you go. So it happened. It is coming out. And when is it coming out? It is coming out in... It's available for pre-order. I don't see the exact date here in front of me. I'm sorry. But sometime in the next, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, I would imagine. Certainly in time for the holidays. So nice. Or not nice. I don't like the white. Leo and I, we always talk about this, 2 years ago... sat in on a Microsoft Live event where they talked about all these new games coming out. They showed off this really terrible version of Halo Infinite that they were going to release in 2 months. We couldn't believe how terrible it was. Then they delayed it for a year. And then they've spent the last year adding features that didn't come out in the game when it was originally released. Right now it's September, actually. So back in August, we were supposed to see campaign co-op, including split screen. And they have now canceled that.
That's
not going to happen. So network co-op is going to happen in November. Split screen co-op, we have two or four people on one screen.
Couch mode, we call it.
Yeah. So I understand that's going to be hugely disappointing for a lot of people, but I have to say, I don't see it as big of a deal for this kind of game. I think for kids' games and stuff where you want to play side by side,
it would be hard when you split the screen to play Halo. I think it's just not enough.
Because if you don't like playing Halo on like a whatever that is, a 10-inch screen. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know, it's not a great experience, honestly. But anyway,
it has to be the right game. They must also have metrics that say nobody cares if they make this or not, right?
There's going to be a lot of griping about this one, but including by people who are never going to use it. I mean, that's part of the problem. But here's the thing. There's a lot of stuff that was supposed to be out by now that still isn't out, like Forge, right, which is the tool you use to create multiplayer levels, has been delayed. I think... it's going to be in beta soon. I think maybe in November, but I wouldn't be surprised if that got pushed out yet again. There is a mismanagement occurring here with Halo Infinite that I find a little troubling.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's like 2 years later, guys. Like, we still don't have the full game. And the other thing was, if you think back to when it actually did launch, which was about a year ago, almost a year ago, they were talking about having, if I'm not mistaken, quarterly seasons. They said the first one we're going to delay because we have this stuff we want to get out that, you know, we didn't get out for the original release. So I think they delayed season one until May. They're delaying season two until, I think, November or January. I don't remember what the date is. Like, they haven't been able to get onto their own schedule. Actually, yeah, season three has been delayed till next March. Guys, they haven't been able to do anything on time. Like, there's something weird going on here that I don't quite understand. And I don't know if it's like 343 Industry, which is now in control of Halo, is if they're the problem, or I don't know what it is, but it's a little disturbing. So a lot of stuff that's been promised that should have been out by now is not, will be out sometime over the next several months. That's all I can say. And then whether Halo Infinite ever gets on the normal or pre-announced season schedule is your guess as good as mine. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. It's taken a long time.
Do you play a lot of it?
No, I don't. And I got to go back, and I keep meaning to do that.
I used to stuck on, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I liked it. I liked how much of a throwback it was to the original Halo games, and I liked the style of it, the look of it.
Yeah.
But I was very specifically playing campaign. Like, I never really got into multiplayer, which has been a problem since Call of Duty's been a thing, right? So I'd say ever since, it was probably Call of Duty 2 where I started trying to convince my friends we need to play Call of Duty instead of Halo, right? Because we were probably playing Halo, even original. Well, it was probably Halo 2 at the back then. But to me, this is the best game since Halo 3, if that means anything to anybody. I think the first three Halos are classics and were super replayable. And I think they kind of lost their way. But I haven't replayed it either, so I don't know.
I think it's a nostalgia thing. People go, oh, yeah, I remember that game. I loved that game. And then
yep.
They don't really play. What happened to the TV show? Wasn't there a Halo TV show? That's
there
not
is.
Sank
no, it
without
happened.
A trace.
Yeah. No, it's happened.
It happened, yeah.
It was okay. It was okay. Right. Like, it's like Mandalorian-style special effects, that kind of thing. It was okay.
I feel like there was a lot of hype before it came out. As soon as it came out, it was like, oh, never mind.
You just put this thing in my head that I think maybe is a good comparison. You know, if you go back a million years ago, like when Star Wars first came out, or you go back to the 80s, whatever blockbuster movies came out, movies would be in the theater for a long time. There were big events. And sometimes if there were big enough movies, they would come back into the theater, right? And then there was some long period of time before it would ever show up on like HBO back in the day, and eventually would come to home machines, right? The VHS or maybe DVD eventually. But those time frames were all like really dragged out. And those movies they would make money over like a long time frame. And today, big blockbusters make all their movie in the first week. And then they're out on, direct to video or digital video. Sometimes day and date, but oftentimes just like a few weeks later. Like the new Halloween movie that's coming out this October is going to be on Paramount Plus the same day.
Wow.
Like it's completely different. So, like when Halo was out, the original couple of Halos, those were big events. They lasted for a long time, and people played them for years. And Halo Infinite is probably the most expensive, the biggest, best, whatever Halo ever. But I feel like it gets compressed down. Like it's just not the big event that it was over a long period of time, like these earlier games were. I think it's just the way the world's changed. Or maybe 343 Industries is terrible and they really screwed it up. I don't know. It's one of the two, but I feel like entertainment has really compressed, you know, the time frame we spend on it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And part of the reason is things like Game Pass and subscription plans, which Microsoft is expanding, because of course they are. I don't know. Like I've been playing like an old version of Call of Duty. So for me, this one game has actually lasted for years, but that's only because to me, the more recent games have been terrible. So I've been kind of stuck using an older version of the game. But I don't know. I find it better. I like the multiplayer of this 4-year-old Call of Duty game better than I like Halo Infinite multiplayer, if that means anything. I don't know.
And if you want co-op mode, there's always Mario Kart. Come on, just, you know.
Yeah.
You don't need Halo.
Or Peacock. I said Paramount Plus.
Oh, Peacock. Plus. Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. That day and date thing didn't work out so well for Warner Brothers HBO. They've kind of moved away from that. That hurt. The movie theaters were pissed.
Yeah. I liked it.
We loved it. We didn't have to go to a movie theater. Exactly. That's why the movie theaters were pissed.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can't all be Top Gun. Anyway. So
true.
There There have been rumors over the past few months about something called I guess it was called Xbox Game Pass Family Plan. So Microsoft has confirmed this is a thing. They are publicly testing it in Colombia and Ireland, those two huge markets for Xbox.
Colombia and Ireland. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the interesting bit here is the price, because the euro right now is worth, actually, I think it's worth less than a dollar. So we've reached a point where, like, euro prices are the same as U.S. prices. And the price on this is $21.99 per month. And it allows you to share your Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscription, which is normally $14.99 just for you, with up to four friends or family members, meaning they don't even have to be in your house. They could be out in the world like my kid is, or they could be my friends. And that gets really interesting because that's not that much more expensive. Like if you think like $14.99, like how much would you have to go up for this thing to make sense for five people? Apparently go up about $5-6. Like that's not that bad. And that is really interesting. So if that's going to be the pricing, I think this is going to be like a no-brainer. This is going to be like Microsoft 365 family of Xbox, right? Because you can share it with a bunch of people, including friends, which is crazy, but they're literally calling it friends and family. So there you go.
Cool.
I think there's going to be a limitation to how many times you can swap friends out, so you're not doing something like every weekend you're gaming with five different guys or whatever, but still, that's really cool. We also finally got our first list of Xbox Game Pass titles that are coming this month across console, PC, and cloud. My favorite is called You Suck at Parking. And as I joked on Twitter, if you prestige in this game, you get a Pennsylvania license plate because these people have no idea what they're doing.
You suck at parking.
That is literally the name of one of the games.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Train Sim World 3 looks kind of cool. I really like the idea of train. In fact, I'd like to get a big screen from the other side of my office and just put like a train simulation thing on it, and just let it drive across the country or whatever it does. You know, I guess you can put it different places, but that's kind of cool. I don't really recognize most of these games, unfortunately, but this is the first set that's coming over the first half of the month. So obviously, there will be more. And I don't really talk about this too much. In fact, I don't write about this too much either. But one of the things that always happens every month is that some games leave Xbox Game Pass, right? And starting next week, there are going to be several games that are going away. The big one there is A Plague Tale: Innocence. So that's actually an awesome game. If you're playing that, you might want to wrap it up. You got about one more week. But if you are an Xbox Game Pass subscriber, and you want to buy a game that's leaving the catalog, you can get a 20% discount because you're paying for the subscription. So if you have to keep playing, you can. And I missed one. What was the last one?
Noise reduction for Xbox Party Chat.
Woohoo! Yeah, so if you are familiar with anything that's going on in the world today, you may have heard there was a pandemic. And in the wake of that pandemic, tools like Zoom and Teams and not Skype, but everything that's not Skype, have gone gangbusters. And one of the big things that Microsoft and those other companies are adding to their products, there's all this AI-based noise suppression. You're in a busy coffee shop, maybe, or dogs are barking, whatever it is, you get rid of that kind of stuff. Also, I review a lot of PCs, and I will tell you one of the big changes we've seen, the big shifts this year, not just the P series Intel processors, but 5 megapixel or even higher, 1080p or 5 megapixel webcams now. So instead of the old 720 piece of garbage that it's always dark and blurry, really nice quality webcams, and then nice quality microphones, all this stuff, because everyone's doing hybrid meetings. But you know, one of the places where noise suppression would make a lot of sense, Xbox Party Chat, because I don't know if you ever get online with anybody, but they're chewing food, they're singing to themselves, the dog's barking in the background, right? So this is another area where AI-based noise suppression makes a ton of sense. And so Microsoft has actually released this. So there's a new update out for Xbox Series X and S that adds this feature. So if you play with others, you don't have to be as annoyed by them as you usually are.
What a relief. Thank goodness. Yep. I don't want to take a break here because we just took a break. So why don't you do your tips and app pick, and then we'll break before Mary Jo's Enterprise Pick of the Week. This gives Mary Jo a full 10 minutes more of snoozing, and I think everybody
can
get behind
that.
You're very welcome.
Mary Jo just went for a walk around the building. That's fine. It's fine.
Yeah. I was gone. No one noticed.
No one noticed. All right. Go ahead. So let's start with the Pick of the Week, Tip of the Week.
Yeah. So this is about the privacy controls in Windows 11 that you should think about and worry about. And the reason is, when you set up Windows 11, like Windows 10, you get this screen where they have these really non-granular global, you know, things that you can kind of check or not check. Those things don't do anything. It's better just to leave that alone, get into Windows, you know, get to the desktop, you know, do your configuration, all that stuff. And then as part of that process, take a look at the privacy and security page in settings. And what I've done is in the Windows 10 field guide, I actually went through the whole thing, and it is a nightmare. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of options in there. Most of them don't do anything, or they're just super obvious. Like, they're obviously, if you want to go through all of your device privacy settings and say, I don't want whatever apps to have access to the camera, whatever it is, like, that stuff's all pretty obvious. But is there anything in there that actually makes sense? For example, could I turn off telemetry in Windows 10 or 11? No, you can't. But there are options you should look at. I don't know if I want to go through every one of them. Honestly, well, there's only seven or eight. So the couple I point out, the several that I point out are, there's an option for, you should just read the article to get the whole list because this is hard to describe where these things are. But by default, Windows will show you personalized ads using an advertising ID that identifies you uniquely to advertisers so they can learn what you do and then give you better ads. Turn that off.
Yeah.
Don't ever do that. No. That's... Don't ever do that.
Yeah.
And by the way, if you care about advertisers for some reason, studies have shown that
they don't care
any
about
ads
you.
Are as effective. Oh, yeah, the effectiveness of ads, it doesn't matter.
No.
So here's an idea: don't let them track you, and don't worry about that stuff. And don't ever think that you're going to see things that are like awesome because you like a certain. It doesn't work that way. It's not. This is just about tracking you. So turn that off. There's also I turn up. This is a big thing for me, but. Show me suggested contents in the settings app and also other settings related to suggestions. Go into settings, search for suggestions, and turn off every single one of those things. Like these are just little ads for other things that Microsoft offers, whether they're apps or services or features of Windows. Just turn it off. It's noise. It's ridiculous. You get these little things that pop up in the corner. Like, hey, did you know we offer a valet service for, you know, yeah, nobody cares. Diagnostic data. Can't turn it off. That's the telemetry data. But there is an option to turn off optional diagnostic data. So we kind of forget about this. But back, one of the concessions you know, that Microsoft made in Windows 10, the privacy theater, you might recall me referring to it as, was they separated the diagnostic data into required and optional. By default, optional is on. You can turn that off. So you can minimize the amount of data that Microsoft gets about your PC. You can't turn it off. Tailored experiences is a section with all the personalized tips, ads, and recommendations. Again, turn that stuff off. Feedback frequency, I recommend turning this to never because Microsoft ignores your feedback. So why would you deliver it to them? They're not going to pay attention to it anyway. Just don't worry about it. Don't be prompted to give feedback when something goes wrong. Microsoft does not care. I can guarantee. And then the final one is cloud content search. This is tied to that thing we were talking about the other day, or last week with Jensen Harris and Search Highlights, which is that by default, Windows Search, which is built into, well, it's not in the Start menu, but it's through Start or through its own interface, personalizes its results based on what you have in Bing, OneDrive, Outlook, and other Microsoft services. I don't understand people who go to Windows Search to search the web personally, but... You can actually turn off the personalization bit so that it only delivers results from your PC. And just turn off your Microsoft account in Search, right? So those are the big ones.
And you have a list in your on your blog guide, yep. Of all of that yep. stuff.
Yeah, so this was actually an excerpt from the Windows 11 field guide.
Oh, nice.
It's much shorter than it was in the Windows 10 field guide because honestly, documenting what every single one of those options does is a thankless task that doesn't help anybody. It's better just to kind of focus on the stuff that really matters.
I leave it all on because I don't.
Or leave it all on. Just don't worry about it.
So Keith 512, who's very good in our IRC, recommends a program. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of it called O&O Shut Up 10. Mm. And it is a.
This turns off telemetry?
Yeah, it's a free program. It basically combines all these settings into one UI. And so it's a free program that you go through. And you could just go, I mean...
Okay, so I'm actually fascinated by this because last week we talked about NextDNS, right?
Right.
And I think I mentioned that I talked to Raphael about this and I was talking about putting this on the network router and how would that... He said, and I'm not going to get this exactly right, but he said that that kind of thing has a negative impact on the telemetry data transmission thing.
Yeah.
Well, no, but that it actually causes Windows to start using up cycles and stuff because it will just keep trying. Like it can't stop trying.
So if you're going to use that, you might want to use this to turn
instead
it off.
Because if that does what I think it does, because in my head, what I was imagining was, you know, it's your basic, you basically fool the thing into thinking it's doing the right thing, and then it just doesn't send the data to the right place. Like, honestly, like that type of solution would be very interesting.
Like
if that's what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
O&O Shut Up 10 from O&O Software. O&O Software.com.
I'm going to look this one up after the show.
So that's interesting that Raphael said that. I would like to find out if that's true because I do put DNS, NextDNS on my router.
Yeah, I'll ask him to clarify
the whole
that.
House. And I have a few Windows machines. I had that Alienware that was a Windows machine first. I got it for gaming. It's the Ryzen and stuff. And I reinstalled Windows on it the other day so I could play Stray. And it was so slow as to be unusable. I thought, well, maybe in time it'll get better. And it never did. It would take, 30 seconds to open a program. By that time, you'd have clicked the icon five times, so it would open the program five times. Things like that. It was just really molasses slow. Once you got in a game, it was completely playable and fine. So I'm wondering, maybe that's what was going on, is Windows was trying to send out telemetry and being thwarted. I don't know.
Right.
Or it was some this bad install or something. That was really weird.
Yeah. I'm going to look at this. I'm curious about this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll look.
Anyway, O&O Shut Up 10 plus.
Maybe that'll be my pick next week for the app.
So take a look
we'll
at
see it. If it works.
Thank you, Keith. And then you have an app pick of the week.
Yeah, so people are probably familiar with PowerToys. PowerToys has been resuscitated for Windows 10 and now Windows 11. It is, I don't know the exact number, but it is several utilities, right? They all run from kind of a central interface, which I'm not a huge fan of, but the utilities are Always On Top, Awake, Color Picker, Fancy Zones, Image Resizer, Keyboard Manager, Power Rename, Power Toys Run, Shortcut Guide, Video Conference Mute, which made its way into Windows 11, and then there are various File Explorer add-ons and mouse utilities. So starting with version 0.62, which just came out yesterday, I think, there are three new tools, so that was kind of a surprise. And Mary Jo, I don't know if you know this, but I sort of assumed this was all made by Microsoft employees. Mm-hmm. But actually, a lot of these are just made by enthusiast developers who submit this stuff, and I don't know who accepts it. But a lot of these are
people know
outside of Microsoft. Yeah, I didn't know this.
I
always
thought it was in-house stuff. Huh.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh. So there are three new tools. Screen Ruler, which is
useless,
described as
but okay. Good to have.
Quick and easy way to measure pixels on your screen.
No, actually, I would
quick
use
accent,
that. I would use that.
Right?
Yeah.
Quick Accent is a way to write letters with accents easily. That is actually
I
very
need
difficult
that.
To do.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then Text Extractor, which is a way to basically use something like OCR to take the text out of a graphic and place it on the clipboard as text. And that one was, I should know who that was. I'm embarrassed. I didn't actually maybe find the article. That one was written by a guy, Joe Finn. That might not be his full name, but he is, he contributed that from outside of Microsoft. So he's a reader. He's probably a reader of your stuff as well. He probably, hopefully watches the podcast. If he does, thank you. If he doesn't, he mentioned it in the comments to my article. But
I'm looking in the GitHub to see if they give credit in the GitHub.
Yeah, they do. They do.
So you could find out there. Yeah.
That's where I actually saw it the first time.
Yeah.
And then I later found out one of those guys is someone I, know virtually through the site. I downloaded this from the Microsoft store yesterday. I did not get the three tools for some reason, the three new tools. But right before the show started, I got an update to PowerToys, which I didn't have time to install. I suspect that's where I think they might have screwed up the store release. But if you get you can get this from GitHub or from the Microsoft store. And if you get it today, it should have the three new tools.
I install this on every Windows machine primarily for the reason that I can then turn off Caps Lock, which drives me nuts.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So I don't include this in my post-install checklist thing, but one of the things I do, I've saved from like 8 or 10 years ago is a registry script, I guess you'd call it, that does exactly that. It turns off the Caps Lock key.
Yeah, drives me nuts.
Yep.
And then, of course, there's so many other little, useful things. It's nice to have.
Yep.
Get the latest Power Toys. And it's free. Yeah, it's still around. It's actually back, crazy. Right? They discontinued it for a while.
It's back. That's right.
Yeah.
Yep. It disappeared for several years, and now it's back.
So let's take a little break, and then Mary Jo Foley with her Enterprise Picks of the Week. And Paul is going to be back. We can't get rid of him. It's a cocktail, not beer, this time. That'll be fun. But first, I want to tell you about our sponsor, Tanium. The industry's approach to cybersecurity, says Tanium, is fundamentally flawed. IT management and security point tools only offer a small piece of the solution needed to protect your environment. Many of them say, oh, we could stop all breaches, when they simply can't. It's not true. Making decisions based on old data, stale data, trying to defend your critical assets from cyber attacks with tools that don't talk to each other, that's just no way for an IT team to navigate today's attack surface. It's time for a different approach. It's time for Tanium. Tanium says it's time for a convergence of tools, endpoints, and IT operations and security. They have solutions for government entities, education, financial services, retail, healthcare. You can trust their solutions for every workflow that relies on endpoint data. They've got asset discovery and inventory, so you can track down every IT asset you own, and you can do it instantaneously. By itself, that would be enough, but it does so much more. You've got risk and compliance management, which will find and fix vulnerabilities at scale in seconds. Imagine patching all your endpoints in a second. Threat hunting. You can hunt for sophisticated adversaries in real time. Client management, automate operations from discovery to management, sensitive data monitoring. A lot of us have to keep track of where that data is. Now you can index and monitor sensitive data globally in seconds. Tanium protects organizations where other endpoint management and security providers have failed. One platform, Tanium, identifies where all your data is across your entire IT estate, patches every device you own in seconds, and implements critical security controls, and it does it all from a single pane of glass. That's awesome. Kevin Bush, the vice president of IT at Ring Power Corp, said, Tanium brings visibility to one screen for our whole team. If you don't have that kind of visibility, you're not going to be able to sleep at night. Sounds like he's talking about his own experience. Maybe yours too. With real-time data comes real-time impact. If you're ready to unite operations and security teams with a single source of truth and confidently protect your organization from cyber threats, it's time you met Tanium. To learn more, visit Tanium.com/twit. That's Tanium, Tanium.com/twit. We thank Tanium so much for supporting Windows Weekly. Now, we turn to Mary Jo Foley and the well-rested Sirachi for a enterprise tip of the week, or pick of the week.
Yes. So Microsoft has a video product called Microsoft Stream, and it's for creating, managing, uploading, downloading videos for corporations. So you know how if you're in a company, they want to send out to all the employees a video on something, they would use Stream. So there's been a mobile version of the Stream app, but Microsoft has completely redone it. So they've released a beta version this week for iOS and for Android of the new Stream mobile app. And this beta gives people using Stream access to both Stream Classic and the Stream version that's hosted on SharePoint. It's got a whole new UI. It's got a personalized home feed. Microsoft has an improved video viewing experience. But there are a lot of things that are not in this yet, like video recording, uploading, and offline downloads, which are pretty major features. It sounds from Microsoft's blog post this week that they intend to go GA with this without those big features in it, but they've committed to add most of these features, if not all of them, sometime in 2023. So if you're somebody who uses Stream in your corporation, you might want to go check out the new beta of the mobile version of the Stream app.
It's funny how times have changed. I, for years, would go every month to HP down in Cupertino with a friend, and we would record interviews with the executives and stuff as cassette tapes.
Oh, wow.
That they would then distribute to the, you know, all the sales personnel had, you know, fleet Tauruses with cassette players, and they would distribute it to everybody, you know, thousands of copies of these tapes and expect them to listen to it in their car as they're on their way. Right. You know, to appointments or commuting. Now it's all video, which makes a lot of sense. You know,
it does.
Yeah,
yeah.
They built a huge studio just to do this stuff.
Excuse me.
Yeah,
in Southern Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
Enterprise pick number two.
Yes, this is Microsoft taking advantage of a company that they bought last year called Pier 5. Pier 5 does content delivery network services and software. So Microsoft has come out now with a product called Microsoft ECDN, which is Enterprise Content Delivery Network. It's basically for Microsoft, the way Microsoft's positioning it is it's for improving live streaming of large corporate webcasts and virtual events for people who use Teams live events. So right now you can buy this product as a standalone, or you can get it directly from Microsoft if you have a volume account or via a Microsoft partner. But it's available now. It's called Microsoft ECDN. And if you're somebody who uses a CDN and you want to use it with Teams Live events, you may want to check this out.
Okay. Pier 5. A CDN. ECDN.
Whatever, ECDN.
Whatever an ECDN yeah. is. Now we have to bring Paul and Stephanie back in to play
yes.
because it's time yes. to get drinking. Paul and Stephanie spent a good amount of time drinking wine up in the Adirondacks, it looked like, according to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did.
And a lot of apples up there.
Yeah. So Stephanie calls this apple squared. Speaking of not being able to type accents easily, I couldn't figure out a way to do superscript, I guess we call that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Superscript, right? It should be apple. Like it's apple to the second.
Yeah.
You know, I tried so many ways to get that to work. I could do it in Word, but I could not figure it out in Notion. Anyway, four parts apple cider. Four Pats, jeez.
Four Pats. Four Pats, apple cider. Yeah.
Four Pats
some
of
vodka. What?
Four parts of green apple vodka.
Green apple vodka. Yum.
Yeah, one of my favorites.
Yum.
One part lemon and then egg white.
This sounds good.
Egg white has become the go-to for my wife's cocktails. This is what adds that kind of creamy top.
You know what? This would probably taste a little bit like a pisco sour kind of, right? Yeah, the official drink of Peru.
That's interesting you say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we knew a Peruvian chef who used to make that for us
pretty
regularly.
Oh, they're so good.
In fact, he used to add pisco to, he would make like a tuna tiradito, and when it was done, the food was gone, but the liquid was still there. He would pour the pisco in there and turn it into a cocktail. Yeah.
Wow. A tuna cocktail.
Yep. That's really good.
I always thought cocktails really need more fish.
Mm-hmm. Well, the tuna's gone. It's just the sauce or whatever.
Yeah. But it doesn't taste a little fishy from the tuna?
No, it's
a little umami, right?
You got the umami in there.
Tuna is mostly neutral, I would say. Anyway, sorry. So shake all the ingredients without ice to foam the egg white. To foam the egg white? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. To foam the egg white.
Yeah. In other words, you don't, you do the egg white separately. Yeah. Add ice and shake again. Strain, serve in a martini glass, and garnish with, wait for it, an apple slice, probably a green apple slice.
If you're sick of apple martinis, this is the thing now, man.
I used to have a lot of my man friends make fun of me for ordering peer teenies a lot, but you know what? This is God's drink.
Yeah. It could have been worse. You could have been ordering a Cosmo.
Exactly.
No, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with a good Cosmo.
No, I think they taste great, but you know, I don't know.
It doesn't look manly holding that little stemmed glass with two fingers, but you know what? You got to go
martinis
for the flavor.
Martinis are manly.
Yeah.
I follow on Instagram apple donut, what do you call it? Account, the donateur, and it's because I guess this time it gets very active in the fall. Mm-hmm. I guess this time of year, up your way, there's a lot of apple cider donuts.
Yes,
is that right?
Oh my God, yes! So we used to go to Vermont and get apple cider donuts in the fall. There's nothing like a thing that goes off a little assembly line, dips in the oil, comes out, gets tossed in that apple, whatever is that, cinnamon dust or whatever?
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's heaven.
There's something about that flavor.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let me see if I'm trying to find his account. I feel
it's no pumpkin spice, guys.
Oh, no. This is the original.
No. This is an actual spice, not a concoction of the beer industry or whatever.
Hey, don't blame the beer industry for that.
Well, God,
but blame Starbucks.
Every beer company on earth makes some form of.
I blame Starbucks.
But it's given a lot of scope for New Yorker cartoonists, so it's cool. Seems to be a New Yorker cartoon about pumpkin spice every week. I'm still looking for the apple cider. Darn it, I forgot. Well, sorry, I'll have to leave that as an exercise for later. If I can find it, I'll show you next week. Well, so many delicious apple cider donuts. Nice. So
yeah, on the road to, I think it's Waterbury. It's where, what's that Vermont ice cream company? Ben & Jerry's. Right past Ben & Jerry's on the way to Stowe, Vermont, is an incredible apple place with apple cider donuts.
Amazing. I missed that. When I was a kid, we'd go apple picking this time of year. Yeah. And then and then they would always have their own pressed cider that we pick up these giant gallon jugs of.
Right.
And then if I could have my way, we would leave it on the back porch to turn into Applejack, because it would ferment over time. And then as the snows came, it would freeze. The slush was all water, and what was left was highly alcoholic.
Yes.
at least for me, at the age of 12, it was highly alcoholic. Yeah. That was my little thrill. Well, that's it for Windows Weekly. I have a date with Motley Crue, so I'm going to get out of here.
All right.
Paul Thurrott has a date with his book, The Field Guide to Windows 11.
Yep.
How's that coming along? Making any progress?
It is coming along. Good. It is coming along. I worked on it over the weekend when I was away.
Oh,
I
nice. Believe that. You're dedicated. Go to leanpub.com to get that.
Get it out in the world. You can see how dedicated, but it will happen.
It'll happen. You can also go to his site, Thurrott.com. Become a premium member. You'll get all sorts of extra great content. Highly recommended. Thurrott.com. Mary Jo Foley writes for ZDNet at allaboutmicrosoft.com. And she's filing regularly. And together they form the dynamic duo known as Windows Weekly. I'm sorry to have kept you waiting with the Apple event. But
well, we do blame you, Leo.
It's all my fault. Yes. I thought they'd be done an hour. I didn't. Anyway, glad we could get there. I hope you have a wonderful week. We invite you to watch the show every Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific when there's no Apple event, which is pretty much most of the time. That's 2 p.m. Eastern time, thank goodness.
You know what, though? Usually it wouldn't be on this day, but I think because of the holiday.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. They moved it. Usually it's on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Usually it all works out. But
yeah, we don't usually bump into it.
Yeah, it's a little weird, yeah. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. The live streams, which are both audio and video, are at live.twit.tv. After the fact, you can also get the show at twit.tv/ww. There's a YouTube channel dedicated to Windows Weekly, or you can subscribe in your favorite podcast client. If you want to chat with us during the live streams, irc.twit.tv or Club Twit members in the Discord. Mary Jo's in there too, as am I. If you're not a member of Club Twit, $7 a month will get you ad-free versions of all the shows.
By the way,
so
Paul
is Paul.
Was in there today.
Yay! Paul also has a unique show called Hands on Windows. It's only available to club members right now as we grow the show. That's one of the things the club does for us. It gives us the wherewithal to do new shows, which do cost money, before you're big enough to get advertising. And so we have Hands on Windows with Paul. We have Hands on Mac with Micah. We have the Untitled Linux Show with Jonathan Bennett, the Giz Fizz with Dick DiBartolo, Stacey Higginbotham's Book Club, a bunch of shows that start there. And one hopes we'll get into the public eye, as This Week in Space did with Rod Pyle. So you get those shows right now and the Twit Plus feed with lots of other content and all of that for $7 a month. Or you can just buy Hands on Windows by itself for $2.99. All of the shows are available ad-free if you just want one show for less than $3 a month. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit. It's all explained there. That's the place to go. And we thank all of you for supporting the show. We really appreciate it. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. Have a wonderful week, and I will see you next time on Windows Weekly. Bye-bye.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I am Ant Pruitt, and I am the host of Hands-On Photography here on Twit TV. I know, you got yourself a fancy smartphone, you got yourself a fancy camera, but your pictures are still lacking. Can't quite figure out what the heck shutter speed means? Watch my show, I got you covered. Want to know more about just the ISO and exposure triangle in general? Yeah, I got you covered. Or, if you got all of that down, you want to get into lighting, you know, making things look better by changing the lights around you. I got you covered on that too. So check us out each and every Thursday here on the network. Go to twit.tv/hop and subscribe today.